ba 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 ba. Hip and a lip. Ba 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 ba.
Yeah, so much enthusiasm from Mr. Hip this evening, Tuesday evening, the 10th day of January. Even though every single time I do that, I realize that probably nobody's listening on the date that we actually do this. So for you, it's either the 11th or the 12th or whatever. But a lot of enthusiasm to lead us into our Giants post-mortem as we will break that all down. But hope everybody out there is enjoying the dark cold days of winter, although I guess we're going to have a little warmer weather the next couple of days, but descend right back into the cold this weekend. Yes, fabulous, just as the lip likes. Well, it
the lip doesn't speak for himself when he says post-mortem New York Giants. Everybody said, oh, the Giants lost, oh, they were, they expect them to win. Oh, wait a second. Well, all right, we'll get into a little bit more. But this is Hip and the Lip, a New York podcast. I'm going to be enthusiastic. I don't care what happened yesterday. I don't care what happened the day before. I don't care if Derrick Rose goes AWOL. I don't care if Aaron Rodgers kicked ass. Here we are. Let's go. New York sports. Follow us on Twitter at Hip and the Lip. That's the Lip spewing his nonsense, trying to reply to reporters and engage in dialogue. And usually they just probably laugh at his snide remarks. And you can follow us or listen to us, subscribe to us on iTunes. Yes, we are there, Hip and the Lip. For Android users, hit up Stitcher. It's a good app for podcast listening. Or you can just listen to it off the website. All right, enough of that. Yes, this is the Giants postmortem. They lost to the Green Bay Packers at Lambeau, 38-13. The game was not as close as the score indicated. So, New York Giants losing 38-13. Their season's over. You know, you could, where do you begin with this? I mean, we had so many narratives going into it. How are the Giants defense going to contain Rodgers? Yes, it was a close, you know, low scoring game in the first half, going in the Giants' way, it seemed. Although, at least on the defensive side, containing Rodgers, Giants missing offensive opportunities in the first half where they really could have capitalized and tried to really set the tone of this game. And then all the wheels fell off essentially in the second half. I know there's, you know, different reasons to pick apart what happened, and, you know, it all sums up in this final score. Over, yes, they closed the chapter on the 16-17 season, an 11-5 regular season record, a tough first-round draw against a very hot team, and in the end, they fall up short, scoring less than 20 points for the, I believe, sixth consecutive game. And so it goes. So the Lip, look, I'll leave it to you to where you want to begin to start what kind of taste this game left in your mouth throughout and after.
I mean, you can begin in so many different places with this game. And here's the one thing I will say is that never before in the history of the NFL did a 25-point loss or a 25-point disparity of a team that wins and loses deserve and require so much post-game analysis and breakdown. So usually you have a final score of 38-13, and you go, oh, wow. I mean, you know, the team that won must have just ran roughshod over the other team, and they must have just dominated right from the beginning, and it was probably never even competitive or close. And really, what is it to talk about? The other team just was not as good. The other team stunk. This team was great. Not the case. Not the case at all. I mean, you joked about how misleading the score was. It wasn't even that close. Well, I mean, maybe the closest 38-13 game it is, especially when you compare it to the other wild card games, which we'll get to a little bit. You know, touch on a little bit later. You know, I mean, none of those games were at all really competitive. I mean, nobody thought that Detroit had a chance in that game, especially, you know, after, you know, Seattle pulled away and, you know, Oakland, like, you didn't really know how that game was going to unfold, but Houston really just took control of that and never looked back. And then, of course, Pittsburgh just jumped all over Miami. This game, though, for all the pregame analysis, for all, you know, breaking down the matchups and offense versus defense, Giants defense, Packers offense, Rodgers, you know, Beckham, Eli, the whole thing, here's what you can't factor in. You can't factor in bad special teams play and mental mistakes. Those are always the things that you can never, ever factor in. And special teams and mental mistakes, and there were physical mistakes too, which we'll get to, but those special teams and mental mistakes killed the Giants in this game. And that, to me, is what it comes down to. That, for me, was the theme. And I'm sure everybody's already heard and, you know, read, if you cared, the follow-up after the game was over. You know, read up on it and listen to what other commentators had to say. So, you know, we'll probably be repeating a lot of it. But for me, I was amazed at how badly the Giants special teams played, particularly the punter and the kicker, who both had terrible games. I know Gould kicked his two field goals, but both had terrible games. The mental mistake by Bobby Rainey fielding a ball on a kickoff at the 3-yard line when you can't even defend, because, you know, and I heard, like, well, he maybe could have stepped out of bounds, you know, with the ball, and then it's at the 40 because, you know, we've seen that before. Fine, you know what? Let that ball go. You let – worst comes worst, it goes in the end zone and you get it at the 25-yard line, or you get it at the 40 if it goes out of bounds, which it was on its way. And then he inexplicably decides to field that ball there. I mean, what he was doing there, I have no idea. And then obviously the Hail Mary, which was the ultimate cruel twist of fate, iron, whatever you want to call it, irony. As we all heard, you know, afterwards and after the game, and read about how the Giants did the same exact thing to the Packers back in 2011. Eli threw a 37-yard Hail Mary pass at the very end of the first half, 6 seconds to go, to Hakeem Nicks. The Giants never looked back from there. Today, you know, yes, Sunday, Aaron Rodgers, 41 yards away, I guess, heaves it up in the end zone. Randall Cobb gets behind, which should, I don't even care if you don't practice it or if you don't, like, you know, game plan for that. You have to know as a defensive back that when on a Hail Mary play, first off, they're not calling any penalties. So you can basically jump on top of the guy. I mean, you're all looking up in the air for the ball. You're all going to jump in the air for the ball. There's no way they're throwing any flags there. So just make sure you get to the back of the end zone and then just everybody jump up and just swat it. Just get it out of there. And the fact that he gets behind them. And they're all just kind of like staring at each other like, you know, look at, oh, is that ball going out of bounds? Oh, wait, no, there's Cobb right behind us catching that ball. And to me, I mean, you can look at so many different turning points in this game, and we'll get to everything, I promise. But to me, that was just such a demoralizing play, considering that the Giants dominated. The first 27 minutes of that game, the Giants, they weren't outplaying the Packers. They were dominating the Packers. And for them to come away, for the Packers to enter halftime up 14-6, considering that it was 6-0 with, you know, 3 minutes, you know, a little over 3 minutes to go in the first half. I mean, that just told you that just says it all for me. And what's amazing is that throughout the, I don't know what you thought watching this in the first half, for the first 27 minutes, I was absolutely giddy watching the Giants defense put forth what looked like a masterful game plan and execution by Spagnuolo, winning the X's and O's game, you know, at least for the first 27 minutes against Aaron Rodgers, you know, winning the chess match, winning the cat and mouse game against Aaron Rodgers, making Aaron Rodgers look like a pedestrian quarterback, making Aaron Rodgers completely frustrated, baffled beyond, you know, comprehension. He looked like he had no idea how to attack that Giant defense. He had no answer. He's scrambling. He's on the pressure. He gets sacked. He's throwing intentional grounding, just completely, like, ridiculous intentional grounding penalty. You know, I mean, he's missing guys. He just looks so out of sorts, considering he was coming in playing the best football of his life, is what you heard all week. And the Giants put forth what looked like a masterful game plan. Like what I said earlier in the week, containing him in the pocket, bringing blitzes, delayed blitzes, disguising their blitzes. Obviously, their secondary playing tremendous and having guys locked up in the secondary, despite the fact that they lost Rogers Cromartie, and that was a huge loss. I mean, they lost him a few minutes into the game. Terrible loss for the Giants. But the fact that they were making him look like an average quarterback and having him completely baffled and not expecting that to continue. And, you know, obviously you thought that, you know, Rodgers would make adjustments and the Packers would adjust and they would eventually start moving the ball and put up some points. You just figured that the Giants can score enough here. Their defense is going to hold them and that they hopefully will be able to come out victorious at the end of the game. Obviously it didn't happen. missed opportunities in the first half. And as we, you know, the first half, you can break down so many different things, but the Giants offense in the first half, how about Beckham? 2 drop balls. Shepard, 2 drop balls himself. A touchdown pass that Beckham had in his hands that he drops leads to a field goal. Shepard, same thing. A touchdown pass in his hands that he drops. Beckham in there at the first drive of the game on third down drops a ball that was literally in the numbers that he just drops. And we'll get to Beckham. I promise. We will get to Beckham too. Even though I'm sure everybody's sick of me, you know, railing on Beckham. You know, the Giants didn't lose solely because of Beckham. Obviously, I'm, you know, going over everything, but, you know, Beckham obviously played a big role as to why the Giants did not win this game. But so getting up 6-0, you know, Rodgers looking like he's just completely like out of sorts. And then the Giants, and I'm going to blame Eli Manning on third down. The Giants have the ball deep in their territory at 6-0. Eli Manning on third down decides that instead of stepping up in a clean pocket to try and make a play, and they're deep in their own territory, he decides he's going to run with the ball. And then Julius Peppers comes off of his block by Eric Flowers. He's getting blocked by Eric Flowers, comes off of his block and sacks him. The Giants then have to punt the ball away. So, I mean, Manning made a bad play there. All right, you can overcome that. But then Brad Wing, the Giants punter, decides that he is going to have the worst game of his life, and he'll start right there by kicking the ball 20 yards or however far it went. The Packers end up getting the ball at the Giant 37-yard line, and then bing, 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 touchdown Packers, as Rodgers had about 3 years to throw the ball on that first touchdown pass. And then Davante Adams, which was a brilliant throw, great throw, and, you know, I mean, that was a great throw and catch. Even though he had 10 seconds, it still required a great throw and catch. So yeah. 7-6 now. And then the Giants get the ball back. And at this point, you're saying, yeah, you want to see them drive there. And Eli Manning is, we know that he's at his best when he is in the 2-minute offense. He's been at his best in that situation his whole career, regular season, playoffs. When he's in a 2-minute offense, he is at his best. Ben McAdoo, you have to let him run that offense there. Put the ball in his hands. Stop with trying to establish, you know, with running the ball. We're going to catch him off guard. We like what the defense is giving us to run the ball. Stop with that. Stop with that nonsense. Tell him to make plays in a 2-minute offense. And don't allow the Packers to get back the ball there. So what happens? 3rd-and-1. Bobby Rainey's on the field for whatever stupid reason. They give the ball to him. He gets stuffed. They punt it away. Back come the Packers. I mean, Jared Cook, of course, this is right before the half, right before the Hail Mary. And, of course, part of the cruel twist of fate, or, you know, irony, is the fact that Jared Cook had a ball in his hands that he dropped after getting hit by the Giants linebacker. I forget who it was. But if he catches that ball and holds on, there's no timeouts left for the Packers. The clock runs out. There's no Hail Mary. Instead, there was six seconds left. Incomplete pass. Rodgers has one more chance for the Hail Mary, and of course we know what happens. And now coming at, you know, 14-6, and then, you know, coming out of the half, they kind of like went back and forth. The Giants defense, you know, kind of like recovered a little bit. You know, of course the Giant offense couldn't get anything going, and then McCarthy throws the Giants the ultimate gift by deciding to go for it on 4th down in his own territory with, like, you know, 6 minutes or whatever to go in the third quarter, up 14-6, decides to go for it and run. And then even worse, I mean, the decision was bad. The play call was worse because he decides that he's going to hand off to Ty Montgomery, when you need like 3 inches, and Montgomery is the deep back there. You know, they're out of the eye. He's the deep back. And they decide to give him the ball, and he gets stuffed 3 yards behind the line. And I'm thinking, like, wow, this could be the turning point here. What happens? 2 plays later, ball's in the end zone. And if you're a Giant fan, you're thinking, like, all right, I was demoralized. The Giants, I'm sure, were demoralized coming out of the half after the Hail Mary. But now we got some life. McCarthy breathed some life into the team. Let's go get it. What happens? Short kickoff, bad coverage. Ball's brought out to the 40-yard line. 3 plays later, ball's in the end zone. As Rodgers decides to adjust, and instead of taking deep drops and trying to make plays out of the pocket and scrambling, and he decides, and the Packers adjust by having him just make quick drops and throwing the ball to the receiver in the slot. So first it was Adams, and then it was Cobb, and 3 plays later, bing, 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 touchdown, 21-13, and now you're like, what the hell just happened?
Well, in part at that point, I think, is because his best receiver So I wonder if it was by design or because he really his best receiving option, who plays on the outside, is out for the game. Jordy Nelson.
Nelson was out for the game. You're right, and that's a fair point.
Was it deliberate because they thought the Giants would be weak in the slot? Was it because they thought that was their best chance because Jordy Nelson is out? Or a combination of the two? I don't know, but in any event.
Because like they went to the quick drop there. I mean, like on both of those passes, the one to Adams and the one to Kopp for the touchdown, it was a quick drop hitting the receiver in the slot. I mean, they were both lined up on Trevin Wade there, who was exposed, playing in the slot. Clearly, he is he's better suited to play the corner position as opposed to playing, the outside corner as opposed to the slot corner. And even though he had a very good year, Trevin Wade, but that's where they missed Rogers Cromartie, as he had been the guy playing in the slot, lining up there, really the whole year. And so they missed him there. And, before you blink, it's 21-13. And then inexplicably, that's when the Bobby Rainey play happens after they kick off. They feel that instead of having the ball at the 40, they get it at the 3. And then now the Giants are pinned there, and then they have to punt it back. And eventually they would tack on a field goal there. And then we'll get to what was, to me, a horrific non-call by the referees. And the referees that had a bad game, too. Hockey Lee had a bad game, I thought. Our buddy, our friend Ed Hockey Lee. Yes, macho Ed Hockey Lee. Yes, well, we didn't get the chance to see his muscles on display since he was wearing the long sleeves, although, considering that it was such a tough and macho thing for everybody playing on the field, or all the players on the field, not have sleeves on. And we'll get to that too with the shirtless Beckham and the no sleeves, and Fox doing stories on players deciding not to wear sleeves in the cold weather, which nobody gives a damn. So like nobody cares. Like what why are we doing stories in the middle of the game about sleeves? But Hockey Lee then, there was a third down, 11, so 24-13, and this came after another Beckham drop on a ball that may have been a little overthrown by Beckham, but you heard Aikman just completely take apart Beckham on the play by saying he didn't run through it, he leaped too early, whatever. That was not an easy catch, but you want to put it on both of them, fine. Third down, 11, at 24-13. The Packers have the ball in their own territory. Rodgers drops back and looked like a guy that just got completely behind the coverage there. Ty Montgomery catches the ball, first down, and you're saying, like, what happened? You see the replay, and it was a clear. And we saw this in the championship game yesterday. For those that watched the Clemson-Alabama game, if you stayed up to 7 o'clock in the morning, is that when it ended, right?
Multiple times. Multiple times.
Yeah, multiple times. Of course, the game-winning touchdown ended up being a pick play, which should have been a penalty, but hey, that's just me. But in the Giant game, on third down 11, Ty Montgomery gets wide open because Davante Adams throws a pick, an NBA-style like pick screen on Janoris Jenkins, who's covering Montgomery, and Montgomery gets loose and makes the catch. And to me, you can say, the Giants may still have had their opportunities, later in the game, fine. To me, that was one of the biggest turning points in the game by Ed Hockey Lee and crew not calling the penalty there. Was to me, it was an obvious penalty, and you hear Aikman like yucking it up and chuckling like, oh, ho, ho, look at him throwing a pick there, oh, ho, 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 and not even calling it for what it was, which was offensive pass interference. So Aikman and Aikman, I thought, had a bad game too, just with some of his commentary and some of his analysis in the game. And I used to be a supporter and a fan of Aikman as a color commentator. You know what? I'm sick and tired of him. I'm really sick and tired of Aikman. Aikman, go away. I've had enough of you. You really are making your anti-Giant colors very much known to everybody. So, get the hell away from me. But, so he's chucking it up, laughing as Adams again throws a clear pick on Janoris Jenkins. Absolutely an offensive pass interference penalty that was not called. And that really may have sealed it. The Packers would eventually score on that drive, 31-13. And at that point, nobody really thought the Giants were going to come back. I thought they were also a couple other questionable calls, like the fumble, Eli's arm coming forward. I thought his arm was coming forward with the ball in his hand, even though his arm was hit. I didn't think that was an obvious penalty. Mike Pereira, I guess, disagreed. Oh, that's an obvious fumble. Really, Mike? How come I've seen that call so many times where if the ball is in the quarterback's hands, it wasn't an empty hand. The ball was in his hand coming forward. How is that an obvious fumble? Oh, obvious fumble. Oh, really? Well, how come I've seen it called the opposite so many other times in other games in recent memory? And then, of course, Pereira has to make it a point of telling everybody how it was a penalty on Leon Hall when he knocked Jordy Nelson out of the game earlier. And this is like 2 hours after that play happened. That was in the first half. and he's making a point of telling everybody, oh, that should have been a penalty. Penalty? How the hell was that a penalty? The ball was there. He was making a play on the receiver that was bobbling the ball. How is that a penalty? So he pissed me off too, Pereira. Both him and Aikman were both just – I had to almost put it on mute because I couldn't stand it anymore.
What about the play where Montgomery twisted his knee and
– That was another one. That was another questionable one too. I mean, you know, and I'm all
so,
for
well,
you.
Let me finish the description of it. He fumbled – well, as he was going down, he got his knee twisted pretty badly. This may have – was this on the same drive where he caught the pass on the 3rd and 11 with 13 minutes to go? I don't remember. It was around the same time. It was in the second half.
I forget which drive it was on.
But on this play, he goes down, the ball comes out. It looks like it may have been a fumble watching it live, and you're like, okay, well, the Giants had an immediate recovery, challenge it, and Hockley announces that Montgomery is ruled because his forward progress was stopped. Now, forward progress stopped, you see happen when a guy is kind of stood up and bodies are just pushing and shoving and the guy is, you know, clearly not going to be able to move forward anymore. Montgomery was going down. That made absolutely no sense to me. That one actually baffled me more because if you call forward progress stopped, play's not challengeable. You can't challenge that as a fumble.
Yeah.
So that one really, I thought...
Yeah, and even Pereira on that one.
That one bothered me more than the other two. Not to downplay the potential significance of the other two, but I thought that one with the Giants would have had a fumble recovery when they're trying to play catch up and where clearly at that point in the game, Aaron Rodgers figured things out and is attacking with the ball in his hands and successfully doing so. That one to me was that one really was pretty much the nail in the coffin, I felt like.
I mean, there's multiple turning points you can look at in this game. I mean, there were just so many different things that went awry for the Giants. And, that's another one, too. I mean, I was questioning that one. I said, was his forward progress stop? I mean, it looked like he was going, and then Pereira comes in. Oh, his knee was definitely down. Where do you see that, Pereira? Where is his knee down? How are you looking at it? What do you have, X-ray vision? You can see that his cartilage is on the ground? Like, to me, I mean, again, Pereira just was pissing me off. But yeah, it's another one. That's another questionable call too. And I thought he definitely did fumble the ball before he went down. You know, forward progress again. It's always tricky when you get into that. A guy gets stood up. At what point do you protect the ball carrier as they're trying to rip the ball out from him and say, all right, you know, forward progress, stop, blow the whistle, play's dead. Stop trying to rip the ball out from him. Because I am a proponent of trying to protect the ball carriers, you know, in those situations where defenders will stand them up and try and rip the ball out, because I don't think that's football. I think that's cheap. But that's not what happened there. And he definitely, you know, looked like he was still going. And I don't know how they blew the whistle there. You're right. So, and that was a big play in the game, too. I mean, just nothing went right for the Giants after that, the first 27 minutes. Or, I mean, really throughout the whole game. I mean, just the drops by Beckham and Shepard, the mental mistakes, the poor special teams, the kicking game that, you know, went in a tank at the absolute worst time after Wing had a tremendous year. Wing was one of their best, most consistent players all season long. Yeah. Brad Wing, their punter. And he decides, you know, this game to have an absolutely miserable game. Gould, same thing. He was like 100 years old, so I guess that explains why his kickoffs went as short as they did. And obviously, look, we know the ball's going to be harder to kick because it's, you know, 0 degrees outside, so we understand that. But the special teams killed them. The mental mistakes, rainy, bad play calling, you know, questionable decision making by the head coach, and adjustments by a great player. And look, you give the great player an opportunity, a window. When the Giants were dominating that first half and they had several opportunities to, to get 7 on the board and they didn't capitalize, when you give that window to the great player who's playing at, you know, an all-time, you know, great level as Rodgers was coming into this game, you're going to get burned, which is exactly what happened. And, I mean, it was just from a Giants standpoint, considering the way they finished up the season, considering how well their defense have been playing, and considering that they do have a 2-time Super Bowl MVP quarterback who was sharp and crisp early in the game. Eli was making his throws, I thought, early in the game. I mean, he was on point.
Yeah.
I mean, the offensive line actually played decent, you know, in the beginning of the game. They had their breakdowns, of course, later as the Packers were able just to pin their ears back and come after them. You know, Flowers had his difficulties again. What a shock. And they didn't slide any, you know, slide anybody in the over to give him help on the left side there. He's not going to be able to be a left tackle anymore. I mean, he's just not cut out to be a left tackle. They're going to have to move him to the right side. He can't stay there. But, I mean, again, from a Giants standpoint, considering all the opportunity, you know, the opportunities that they had early in this game to take control, and they didn't. They come away with only the 6 points, and you gave the great player the window, and he stepped up. He made his adjustments and picked apart really what was a reeling Giant defense in the second half.
All right. Well, let's so I know there's a couple of threads that you want to touch upon here. Let's move this along. So Odell Beckham, you know, just a couple of drops early, never had that big play that, you know, we went into this game thinking the Giants hoped would have, because he's their he's the guy that whenever he touches a ball, he can go the distance. Never happened. They only score one touchdown. Tavarius King scores the one touchdown.
Yeah, the one guy that wasn't on the boat in Miami. The one guy that wasn't on that little trip with the Biebers and the rappers and whoever, and the Kardashian, whoever else was on there. So, yeah. And like the guys that weren't on the trip outperformed the guys that were on the trip. I guess they were making a big deal of, like, those stats. But, I mean, and look, we've talked about it all year. At least I've yelled and screamed about Odell Beckham. And was Odell Beckham the only reason they lost this game? No, of course not. And we just went over all the reasons why they did lose this game. But Odell Beckham played a big part in the beginning of the game as to why they didn't win with his drops. And it's not unfair to question his focus in the game when, again, I'm not going to – if we had our podcast on Tuesday after the trip took place, I would have came on and I would have said, you know what, I don't care about their stupid little excursion to Miami. You know, the coach gave them their day off. They were allowed to do whatever they want as long as they're back into practice and as long as, you know, they're ready to go and ready to prepare and practice and get ready for the game. I don't care what they do on their off day. However, what I will say is that he and everybody else knows, especially in this age of social media and Twitters and Facebook and everything gets posted as instantaneously. He knew, and everybody, and Victor Cruz has, you know, also has to know this best as the veteran of that group, that as soon as that came out, that people were going to be critical of it. And then people are going to turn around and say, even though it's maybe not fair, if you're going to do that, you better come out and perform on Sunday. And those guys did not perform. They came up small in the big game, especially Odell Beckham. Odell Beckham craves the spotlight. He craves the big stage. He brings he showers all his attention on himself and, running around without a shirt in the beginning of the game.
Earlier in the day, they kept showing it during the game, these shots of the Giants receivers jogging on Lambeau Field, you know, well before like pregame warm. This is like, you know, during daylight, you know, well before the game started, jogging shirtless. And remember, it feels like it's in the single digits. Anyway, yes.
What's the point of it? To show how tough you are? To show like, oh, how – and we kept hearing about it throughout Fox and Aaron Andrews. Oh, the sleeves. There's no sleeves. Oh, look how tough they are. Oh, it's a macho thing. And the one thing I will say for the offensive linemen that don't wear sleeves, I have actually heard them say that when they wear sleeves, it gives the defensive lineman or the defensive player an opportunity to kind of like latch on and grab something, and they don't want that, so that's why they don't wear sleeves, which is fine. But – Here's what I'm going to say. Everybody, any Giant fan remembers Plaxico Burress. Now, Plaxico Burress had his off-the-field issues, too. You know, he was the only reason
he
was
a Giant.
Well, as we know. And the only reason, and even before his little incident in the club with the concealed weapon and blowing off his half of his leg, whoops. Plaxico Burress was only on the Giants because the Pittsburgh Steelers wanted no part of him anymore. They said, we can't deal with all of your off-the-field nonsense. Nothing, you know, major, but it was just like with your personality. We can't deal with you. We don't want to deal with you. Goodbye. So the Giants said, all right, we'll bring him in. And Plaxico Burress on the big stage in the NFC Championship game in colder temperatures, in sub-zero temperatures at Lambeau Field in 2008, he showed up with sleeves on, I might add, with sleeves on. I went back and looked at the tape. He had sleeves on, and he had the game of his life. He had 11 catches in that game. He was absolutely incredible in that game. He showed up, and he performed. Odell Beckham shrunk. Odell Beckham for all this me-centric nonsense and, you know, craving, you know, the spotlight, and his star ascending so quickly after his little one-handed catch. And, you know, listen to Francesa, you know, the last couple of days, you know, catch the ball with two hands. Well, you know what? He's right. Nobody cares about your stupid one-handed catches, you know, before the game or, you know, the catch you made against Dallas a couple of years ago. You had an opportunity to rise up and to on the big stage to up your performance and lead your team to a victory, and you failed to do that. You came up small, and now all the criticism that's being levied on you, whether or not you think it's fair, it's too bad and it's tough.
And I mean, we're just talking about drops here when it comes down to the guy.
But people are going to connect it to the trip. Well, was he really focused? And you know what?
That's not my point. I'm not talking about people. I'm talking to you. Okay. And what I'm saying is what we're focusing on here is as is objectively, put the boat thing aside. Down to is the fact that he dropped those pads. I mean, what else are you criticizing him of exactly? He got open, right? I mean, he was open for the passes. He just dropped the ball.
He was open on a touchdown.
I mean, what more to it is there?
I'm not saying it's fair or unfair or that I'm necessarily myself questioning his focus. But that's exactly what people are going to do.
But what are you questioning? I don't understand what you are questioning. I don't care about other people.
I'm criticizing because he had a terrible game. He had a miserable game. He was awful.
But what did he do that was terrible besides the drops?
That is his job, to catch the damn ball. That is his job. He had an awful game. Again, Plaxico Burress had 11 catches in sub-zero temperatures in the NFC Championship game. Odell Beckham had a miserable game. He shrunk.
I don't understand. Like,
So
what happens? I mean, like,
that's his job, though. You want to be Antonio Brown? He does score two touchdowns of like 130 yards in the first 5 minutes of his game. You want to aspire to be Antonio Brown? Look, that is the best wide receiver in the league. The big game, Antonio Brown rose. He upped his game. He elevated his game. And it was 14-0 Antonio Brown after 5 minutes. Odell Beckham made zero positive impact on the game for the Giants.
It's a
and that's when you ask your big player, star player to do that.
But it's as simple as saying he sucked because he dropped the ball. Right?
But that's his job to catch it. Is that not his job? And then after the game, you know, we have to hear about it. But it's all part of it, though. I understand that I understand your point. What am I criticizing him for? Is it like, who cares about the trip? You know, everybody, you know, whatever the perception is.
Well, you can go into that.
But it's all part of it, though. Running on the field without your damn shirt on, like you're trying to prove something and making it about yourself.
I mean, so all that stuff, you add all that together and it does piss you off. It does. And that's okay. That's okay.
But that's the problem. And finally, Jerry Reese came out and said, grow up. He finally said
whether
it.
Or not it, well,
yeah. Too late, well, Jerry. You already lost.
Well, right. And whether or not he said it before would have made a difference. Who knows? Look, you know, we've given the Giants, obviously dominating the episode here because their season's over and, you know, there's not going to be much about the Giants to talk about in the coming months. So, so be it.
Yeah, Jason,
are there any, you know,
your contract doesn't want any one year
final, you know, is there a final thought before we transition? We're going to just quickly touch upon the other card before we move on to a preview of the divisional round. But before we do, is there a final thought? We say goodbye to the New York Giants 2016-2017 season.
Hey, look, I mean, it was overall, you know, they had a successful season. You won 11 games. Your rookie head coach wins 11 games. I mean, McAdoo had a rough game. He did not, this was not his best game. And, you know, I think McAdoo definitely showed promise and potential as a head coach. I think as a Giant fan going forward, they do have some talented guys. I mean, obviously, you know, the story now is Eli's getting old. They have to keep bringing guys around them that can help him win if they are going to win with him at quarterback. You know, he's on the back nine as the golf metaphor that Jerry Reese brought up in his press conference. So, I mean, the story about the Giants going forward is their old quarterback or aging quarterback, trying to keep together this defense and trying to make, improvements, you know, maybe in the linebacker, maybe, you know, obviously offensive lines need improvement. They're going to have to definitely address wide receiver, as I think Victor Cruz is on his way out, as it looks like he really just does not really have much left. I mean, that's the story with the Giants. Again, it's a very rough loss because you just felt like if the things would have broke better for them, that they could have won this game and they would have been the ones playing in
Dallas. Or at least it would have been close in the last – at least it would have been close in the last few minutes.
Yeah, look, that, it had the makings of a classic. It had the makings of a legitimate classic, and it ended up just completely spiraling out of control. And now the Giants, I hear, are investigating the wall incident. So I actually had the thought, like, they should turn it into a Hardy Boys book, like the mystery of the hole in the sheetrock, as the Giants, I guess, are investigating the hole in the wall incident. Like, oh, well, we'll get to the bottom of this. So, yeah, we're all waiting with bated breath to find out the results of your investigation.
Yeah, I hope I don't waste five minutes of my life reading about whatever updates there are and just conveniently avoid whatever discussion there is. Thanks, I'm over that already. Look, we'll touch upon the Giants in the coming months, but sporadically, you know, because it's this other live sports going on. Not that New York has a tremendous,
the other fabulous, you know, amount New York sports teams, of, fabulous
performing teams right now, but nevertheless, so we say, you know, we say goodbye to the Giants for now. It is, you know, unfortunately, the season has come to a close. So look. There's not a heck of a lot to get into with the other wild card round games because the games were close and I thought to myself as I was getting ready to talk about this tonight, you know, is this, at least for this round, is it really just a continuation of the quality of the NFL season as we've been talking the last several weeks about how games have not been very good overall and not exciting. I mean, there's a few here and there, but overall, a lot of the games are pretty lopsided. The play is just not very good. And, you know, the teams that came on the short end of the side just look pretty bad. Look, Oakland and Houston, kind of just throw that one out. I mean, it's just a weird set of circumstances with, you know, backup quarterbacks and just an odd set of circumstances there. I do want to throw in though a nugget I came across leading up to that game that ESPN, you know, they have several deals, you know, regarding the types of games that they deal with the NFL to air one this year, and it's not even up to ESPN. The NFL decides which game ESPN, and this is from an article that I read. So, you know, if ESPN comes out and, or the NFL comes out and says it's wrong, so be it. But this is what I read. So I'm relying on the source, but it basically said it's up to the NFL. The NFL chose this game for ESPN to air. And the
just
ongoing
like they
contract
did last year, the Houston Kansas City game that they had last year, that amazing, so the 30 to nothing shutout. Yeah.
There's apparently a specific contract in place to air one playoff game a year, and they pay a specified sum to air the game. To air this particular playoff game, ESPN had to pay the NFL not $10 million, $30 million, not $50 million, $100 million to air the Raiders-Texans.
And a game versus Brock
on top
Osweiler.
Of that, it was simulcast on ABC. So, I mean, Jesus. apparently, they lost $75 million just to air this game. They lost $75 million because, you know, the lack of TV revenue. Who's paying, ad space in a game that just, it's, you know, Saturday early afternoon, just easily the worst game of the slate.
I mean, the Giants Packers game was the best game, even though it was the biggest lopsided, disparity in points.
Clearly.
But it was.
You know, watching the first half of the Giants game, you felt like, all right, we're now watching NFL playoff football. You didn't have that feeling. You didn't really get that feeling at all during the first three games because they were so lopsided.
No.
But you finally felt it. And you felt it because the underdog was actually winning and looked like they had a chance in the first half of the game. That was not the case in these other games.
I thought Miami would keep it more competitive, and I guess they had a chance to kind of get back in. They just didn't. They're just not good enough, Miami.
They had a chance, but you know what? With Antonio Brown had the two long touchdowns in the first 6 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever. Once you saw, like, all right, there's no. At that point, I read a stat that Antonio Brown, he ran 22 routes in that game, which is very few for a number one receiver. He only ran 22 routes in the whole game, considering the outcome, not a surprise. But he averaged over five receiving yards per route that he ran in the game, which, if you think about it, is pretty absurd.
It's kind of an
H-stat. there was the hardest hit, I think, of all the entire weekend. Matt Moore was the unfortunate receiving end, taking a ridiculous shot to the jaw and causing a skirmish on the field. Somehow, I don't know how, it was one of those where his whole body was just twisted because he was hit in the head in that low up of the chin, and it just completely went parallel to the ground perpendicular to the ground to parallel to the ground, like whiplash. It was, you want to see a really vicious hit. Anyway, that game, Miami never really got into it. I thought Miami would establish the run and make some plays in the air, but instead, Pittsburgh completely stuffed Ajayi and had those two quick scores early on. It just was pretty much over. Look, yeah, the Seahawks and Lions now, just went to that.
Yeah, but at least now we'll get a good divisional round game with Pittsburgh and Kansas City, which I think should be a very
good. We'll get to those shortly. Just to wrap it up, the Seahawks beating the Lions 26-6. The Lions tried to keep it closer.
They had nothing. I mean, they just had nothing. They're just not a good team. I mean, they came apart at the end of the season.
Really relying on Eric Ebron to make big plays, and he just kept dropping the ball. Something that he's had issues with his career, and
Ebron for those team.
Zach Zenner, I mean, you're not going to expect him to run well in Seattle. I'm sorry.
And how about Paul Richardson?
I mean, it just rounded. Look, Richardson had a couple of insane catches in that game, huh? The touchdown catch, there should have been an offsetting penalty because he grabbed the defender's face mask, which the refs missed. But they just still give the guy credit for his acrobatic one-handed, you know, grabs that the Giants only wish they had from their star receiver.
Yeah, they didn't have to make acrobatic. They could have just made simple routine catches, and that would have been good enough. But
I know. So, look, you kind of get rid of the waste here, at least for the other three games, and if you will. So now we have, you know, I'd say three out of the four games should be good. Look, you know, Houston and New England. The line, I don't know if it's moved. I checked it a couple days ago.
It was 16.5, wasn't it?
I think I saw only 15.5, so money was put on New England to push the line. I'd like to see what it is now.
I don't know if it's come back down again, but
I think it's 15 now. Okay, so I've never seen a line for a playoff game at this stage of the playoffs that high that I can ever remember. Geez, I mean, and I don't know. I'm going to have to think about that one to, you know, which way I'm going to go.
It's going to require a lot of pregame analysis, so we got to break this one down.
I mean, picking the spread, I think I still have to go New England on it. Because they do have a tendency to rack up the score. That's their thing, and I don't see them slowing down the foot on the gas pedal.
Houston can play defense. Has a good defense. They have a legitimately good defense, but I don't think that I don't think they're going to slow down New England enough. I mean, I think New England's going to probably, you know, they'll probably end up with like 34.
Maybe it'll be close at halftime, but in the end, you know, New England's going to pull away in this thing.
Yeah,
Barring some, you know, bad, like you said, the things you can't account for, stuff like that with bad special teams play.
Well, Belichick teams never make those. I mean, they rarely make those special team or mental mistakes. Right. That's why they're Belichick.
So, but for those kinds of things, I really don't see this one. Yeah. But for seeing those unexpected things, yeah. So that's Saturday night. the game prior to that, and all these games are at the same time as last weekend. So 5 Saturday, then 8:15. The 4:35 game, Seattle at Atlanta. So yeah, I think that, you know, is
– I think Atlanta wins. Atlanta
has been great. Look, Matt Ryan's been great at home all season.
And I'm not impressed by Seattle. I just don't think Seattle. I mean, they're prideful. They're you know, they're battle tested. They, you know, they have a pedigree. We know their defense. They're a very prideful group. But I think Atlanta's going to win that one going away too. What's the line on that one? Are they heavy favorites in that one? I would think that they're probably like 6-point favorites. I would think, right?
5-point favorites.
5 points.
Yeah. You know, Seattle's just been an up and down team.
And they weren't that impressive on Saturday against Detroit. I mean, you know, it was closer. I mean, they really couldn't do much on offense at all or in the early going. They needed a few, like, just ridiculous catches by Paul Richardson. And, you know, they, you know, Baldwin caught a lot of balls in the second half. You know, they pulled away. But I'm just not impressed by Seattle. I mean, they're still a good defensive team. You know, maybe they'll give Matt Ryan and company some fits down there. But it's just on that – in
Thomas
that building.
Thomas Rawls looks good, though, right now. I mean, he yeah. looked –
I mean, and maybe he'll have some success. I mean, maybe he'll have some success running the ball against Atlanta. I don't see them really slowing down Atlanta the whole game. I think Atlanta will eventually get their points in this – even if it's in the second half, and I think they'll pull away and maybe win that by like 10 points.
I think Seattle would have to.
There you go.
Opportunistic turnovers, I think, is to stay in this one. I agree. I think Matt Ryan will get his play. Will get to make his plays as long as that offensive line holds up like it has all season. I mean, that's really been the key. And for Matt Ryan, that happens as it has been, then yeah, the favorite team, we see that. Okay, so moving on to Sunday,
the two better games.
Couple of great games. Should be two great games here. So Pittsburgh at Kansas City. I'm already on the record for choosing Kansas City to go the distance this year. I can't go back on that now. I'm all in.
Well, my NFC pick is already out, so I guess so. I'm not gonna. It's not fair to repick, I guess, at this point. So I won't repick. I'm out. I'm done. Not that I had anything on the line anyway, yeah. But
we have excellent. Here. Yeah, I mean, look, that should be a good game. Pittsburgh is not the same player on the road, and you're playing at Arrowhead, one of the loudest stadiums in the NFL. Kansas City, just a really well-coached team this year, great in all three phases. They're not spectacular in any phase, but they just know how to win games. Pittsburgh's going to try to get Le'Veon Bell going, obviously, and make the opportunistic passes to Brown and whoever, you know, supporting cast. But what's the line here? I think it's really close. Kansas City gets a point and a half.
It was a pick 'em, I think, earlier in the week, so yeah, it went up then. All right.
So money was thrown Kansas City's way. You know, look, Kansas City had a week off, so, you know, people haven't seen them, you know, recency bias. Like, they saw Pittsburgh handle Miami pretty well, but the line moved towards Kansas City. So clearly the bettors think Kansas City. And look, they're at home, and they've played well.
Yeah, they're a very good home team. I mean, Pittsburgh did demolish them. If you remember earlier in the season, this was in Pittsburgh, of course. It was a Sunday night game. But they did demolish Kansas City earlier in the season. But you know what? Kansas City, though, they have a good pass rush. They have a couple guys in the secondary that can make plays. They obviously have Tariq Hill, who on a dime can take off and, you know, take a punt 80 yards or take an outside handoff, or a reverse or get behind the secondary and catch a 70-yard pass or whatever. So we know how explosive he is. And, I mean, this is going to be a good game. I mean, Pittsburgh, we know
Travis
about their
Kelsey
offense.
Had a Kelsey had a handful of 100 receiving yard games this year. Jeremy Maclin apparently is healthy now. I mean, for now. So, they have the makings of a team that could here. So, as we've already discussed prior week's episode. So, look forward to that one. And then, of course, Green Bay in Dallas to round out the week, the weekend. Dallas right now, 4.5 favorites.
4.5?
I thought it would be lower, actually.
Yeah, I
know Green Bay has its
Yeah, I thought it would be around.
You know,
four.
Green Bay has issues on defense. I get it. I get it, but I mean, look, I don't. What's going to slow down Aaron Rodgers in this game? Other than Dallas doing their clock, their clock killing ball control style of play. Fine.
Well, I mean, I think Green Bay can slow down Dallas's running game. I mean, the Giants. I think that the Giants would have been a worse matchup for Dallas, at least defensively. But yeah, I mean, Rodgers. The Dallas is not slowing down Rodgers. We know that Dallas's defense is very average. I mean, their secondary has been okay, but I mean, I think Rodgers is definitely going to put up at least 30 points. And you know, can Dallas match it? Can they score enough points themselves? And you know, can they control the, like you said, control the clock with the running game? Can their offensive line, you know, impose their will on the game like they have pretty much all season long? And, you know, can they make some plays in the passing game when they have to? Can Dak make plays in the passing game when they have to? And, you know, the matchup for him is definitely much better playing Green Bay than they would have been playing the Giants. So, you know, I think he can definitely make some plays. And I think this could be a shootout. This could be like 34-31 or something like that. I mean, I think this is going to be a high-scoring game. And I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be. So, but it should be a good game, though. It should be very competitive. It's Green Bay, Dallas, you know, the Ice Bowl and two historic franchises, and everybody loves the Cowboys, they're America's team, and they're back in the playoffs. And did Jerry put the tickets to the championship game in everybody's locker like he did in 07? He probably won't do that this time. But
I don't know what the hell you're talking about, but okay. I mean, I know what you're saying, but
in 2007, when they played the Giants, he decided to decided that they were definitely going to win the game and put tickets to the championship game in all their lockers, supposedly before the game even began, the Giant Dallas game, and we know who went on to win that game. So, a little premature on Jerry's part. I'm sure he won't do that this time. Although I'm sure he's very supremely confident that his boys will advance to their first NFC championship since, what, like 1996? Right? I think that was the last time they were in the chance. So I think it was. They're well, no, I guess it would have been 95, I guess, was the last year they won the Super Bowl. Because I don't think they've been back in the championship game since the Super Bowl. Since they won their last Super Bowl. They lost in the divisional round to the Packers a few years ago. Lost to the Giants. So when they were the one seed that year in 07. I mean, they've been in the playoffs a handful of other times, but they haven't gotten to the championship game. So it's been a long time in Big D, America's team.
Well, so, you're going to love listening to Aikman give you the color commentary on that one.
Oh, yes. I'm sure it'll be very difficult for him to hide his big silver star that'll be just kind of peeking and just trying to make its way through his face. he should just put the helmet on. Just put the helmet on with the big star on it. Hi, folks. I'm Troy Aikman. Welcome to our broadcast. Yes, I am the former Dallas Cowboy quarterback, and yes, I'm not going to hide my love for my boys and my boy Jerry. No.
All right. Well, all right. There should finally be some good games. At least on Sunday, they should be good games. We'll see about Saturday. Yeah. Watch them all, obviously. And all right. Okay. So I thought it was going to be a fairly, you know, whatever with the Knicks. They've lost 8 of 9. They're just not playing well. Their defensive problems. But man, did things kind of blow up last night?
They have hit rock bottom. They have hit. Rock. See,
yeah, I was thinking the same thing to myself. Rock bottom on this season, at least.
I think in the Phil Jackson era,
last night. So
they keep pushing the bar lower and lower under Phil Jackson.
So what happened here? I mean, look, the Knicks. They had a bad loss to the Pacers. They beat Milwaukee. They lost to them previous to that, but they did find a way to win.
Which is a nice comeback. Interestingly, we'll give them a little credit for that one.
Hornacek used Ron Baker down the stretch in that one over Derrick Rose, and it paid off. You know, look, if Rose was in, maybe they win anyway. But Ron Baker just—I forgot where I knew he looked familiar, and I looked it up. Oh yeah, Wichita State.
Yeah, and the new folk hero, Ron Baker.
So last night, you know, look, you had the national championship game on at the same time as the Knicks game, and the Knicks were playing the Bobcats at home, and well, the story come out of how Derrick Rose was at a shootaround earlier in the day, available, and then he's just not at the game. And nobody asked why right away, meaning the beat writers. And then that Adrian Wojciechowski or whatever, he's like the Yahoo sports guy. Yeah, the Yahoo basketball reporter. I just don't know where he is. And then you're like wondering, well, is the dude okay? You know, like he just doesn't show up and the Knicks don't know where he is and they're playing this game. And I want, you know, and Melo gets tossed, O'Quinn gets tossed, you know, and like, is this team just not able to focus because they're worried about their teammate? Like, what's going on here? Anthony Davis puts in 40 points in 28 minutes, like a ridiculous, you know.
Yeah, he could have put up 70 yesterday. He didn't even break a sweat in that game playing 29 minutes and putting up 40 and 18.
And I think so after the game, he's okay, so at least you know the guy's not dead or, you know, kidnapped or something or whatever. So you know he's, like, okay. And you're like, all right, well, what the hell happened? And, you know, I saw initially it was some family issue, and then reading more about it this morning, it apparently had to do with visiting his mother in Chicago, and that he took a, you know, private jet back today to get to back with the team, and there's a big count, and there he is, Derrick Rose. You can kind of see him in the distance, and yeah, I don't even know what the heck to make of it. And obviously,
I mean, it's not good. It's an abomination. Yeah. You could say it. It's okay. It's an abomination. It's this is something that they should look over his contract and say, okay, you know what? We can void out this contract. Get the hell out. If they could throw his rear end, throw his ass out of MSG and tell him just to get the hell out and never come back, that's what I would do right now. What he did yesterday, I mean, bordered on something. I mean, like, you know, I was going off on Beckham for his terrible performance, and you know we've criticized so many athletes on our program, and you've heard obviously other, you know, just you could criticize athletes for their poor play or whatever. For an athlete to say I'm upset with the team, and for them to give us like, oh, he's not upset with the team, I mean that's just pure and utter garbage. I mean, do you think we're stupid? Do you honestly think we're that stupid that you're going to tell us this has nothing to do with the team and that this was all personal reasons? Come on. You think we're complete morons? So for him to say, I'm upset with the coach for not playing me, I'm upset with my role, I'm upset with this, I'm just going to go back to Chicago, that borders on something that is criminal in professional sports landscape. And if the Knicks had an opportunity to void his contract and throw his ass out, that's what they should do. That's what they should do. Instead, they're not even going to suspend him. He'll be in the starting lineup tomorrow night.
So you simply don't buy the fact that there was any personal issue whatsoever.
If there was, then you tell us. Like, there was if there was a legitimate emergency, somebody suddenly fell ill, I had to get, but you know what? He would have told them then. He would have said,
you could text. Unless your phone is dead. Yeah, I mean, unless your phone is dead, you can text somebody and just say, I'm on my way to the airport. You have to physically travel from somewhere.
But we know that that's not what happened.
You have to travel from somewhere to the airport, right? You have to. So while you're traveling or sitting in the plane about to take off, you have a moment, at least 20 seconds, to send a text message from your phone. You would think to say, tell somebody something instead of completely disappearing. So –
And we know with that, but that's what this was. He was upset with his role, and I want out. That's what he did. He bailed, and that's criminal as a professional athlete, and that is an inexcusable and unforgivable offense. And I honestly don't know. Like I never thought Derrick Rose was this type of guy that he would just, you know, pick up and, you know, just do something like this, where you say, I'm upset with the head coach, I'm upset with the team, I'm just gonna, you know, I'm excusing myself, I'm going home, I'm upset, I'm going home. I mean, yeah, it's something
the
that,
opposite of Kevin. What's the word? If you go into your you need the man, this show's going long. I'm losing it here. An antonym for chemistry in basketball. What would the word be? I don't know, but that's where we are. With the Knicks,
I mean, well, that's what the Knicks are. They don't play any kind of team basketball. There's no cohesion. Everything is individual
on and off the court.
No. Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's on and off the court.
It's it's like the ultimate selfish thing that you can do as a professional athlete is to say, I'm upset with my role, I'm gonna bail, I'm out of here. And the team, I mean, that should be something that should be voidable within the contract, and the team should be able to throw that player out on his ass. Now they're not, because Derrick Rose, well, he's too important to the team. So, you know, it's okay. It's you know, we're going to excuse it. We're just going to give him a little slap on the wrist, and he'll be right back in the starting lineup. They don't even suspend him. How do you not suspend him? How is he allowed to play?
The only explanation is, for some reason, it was the There is a legitimate excuse. I know you're not buying it, but maybe there actually is.
And
maybe
it's crap. What do you think? We're going to take us like we're fools, like we're saps, like we're complete morons? We understand why. If it was legitimate, he would have said, hey, this happened, and nobody would have said a word. If it was legitimate, we see personal reasons as why players misbehave all the time. It's okay if it was legitimate.
I guess,
but it wasn't. It was garbage.
I'm a little naive to give him the sliverest benefit.
I can't give him. He doesn't deserve the benefit of the doubt. He can't.
I didn't say he deserves it. I just say, you know, I'm not 100% like.
How is he allowed to play? He should be suspended until, like, they completely figure out what's – he's suspended indefinitely. We'll get back to you. Do that then. And the fact that Phil Jackson hides and lets his coach stand up and answer these questions. I mean, he is so detached from reality right now, Phil Jackson. It is unbelievable. It's almost like his ego is so massive and that, like, he can't accept the fact that he is presiding, that he is the ringmaster of this circus and this complete train wreck that is this franchise.
What, I mean, how much is he getting paid? How much is he getting paid this year?
$12 million, right? Isn't that his annual?
$15
million? It was 5 for 60, right? Wasn't that kind of 5 for 60? So $12 million.
Yeah, so there you go.
For $12 million, I can't answer where my star point guard went.
Yeah, he doesn't care. He doesn't care.
Just go, right. go back to L.A. I'm sorry you broke up with your girlfriend. Go back to L.A. and ruin that franchise again, you know, and become a special advisor to the Lakers. Wow.
I think I'm over this. Let's move on. Just a brief mention here.
At least Odell we are at that stage. At least he showed up and didn't perform.
And a brief mention here.
Yes.
Unders, we will be at the game tomorrow night. It's their first game in five days or 6 days. They had their, as you said last week, their required 5 day vacation per each four as required for each team in the league. And it's the John Tavares starting lineup night. So I'm looking forward to taking a trip down memory lane and getting a new starting lineup for the, you know, then adding one to my collection.
Yes, and I'm looking forward to adding the very first.
The figurines going from 1998 through 2000. I'm sorry, 1988 through 2001 starting lineups were produced. The Islanders bad back-to-back overtime losses to Colorado and Phoenix. Scoring two goals in the two games, both games going to overtime. Just pretty. Two goals in two games, and somehow they got 2 points out of that, which is pretty remarkable. But considering they scored two goals,
considering that, and that Colorado came into that game with a 10-game home losing streak, and Phoenix had a 9-game overall losing streak. And you know what cures all for bad teams is a team that's probably just as bad. I was going to say almost as bad. They're just as bad. The Islanders are just as bad. And for those that were hoping for, like, you know, post-New Year, maybe they'll actually make a run here, turn it around. They've been playing a little bit better. They have their goalie situation, I guess, resolved. And, you know, maybe they'll actually, like, give us a reason to be hopeful and excited in the second half. Well, we'll score two goals against the two of the worst teams in the league, you know, besides ourselves. But tomorrow night, Jigs McDonald will be calling what may be his last Islander game ever. He is retiring. He started his career 50 years ago as a play-by-play guy for the LA Kings. He will be doing a game for them too. But tomorrow he will be doing the game, and what probably will be, it's not definite, they haven't confirmed, but probably will be his last game. So, of course, for those that go back to the for me, it's just the early 90s. Of course, he took over for as a play-by-play guy in 1980, I think was his officially when he started with the Islanders. But for me, brings back a lot of nostalgia, memories, listening to Jigs call Islander games on TV on the old sports channel with Eddie Westfall back in the day. And so set your DVRs, Islander fans, for those that want to hear Jigs and preserve that lasting memory of that audio of that.
Maybe we can get you to shake his hand and thank him for his service.
We know exactly where they are, so maybe we can kind of sneak up on them. Hey, Jigs.
Well, you could tweet at Hornick and ask him if he's going to be there.
Introduce
you to Jigs.
Oh, I'm sure.
Seriously, I'm not kidding. Why don't you do it right now? Send Eric Hornick a tweet and say, "Are you going to be at Barclays tomorrow? Would be nice to say hi and a farewell to Jigs." I think you should do it right now. What do you got to lose? He doesn't respond.
All right, let's do it. Done.
Okay, so we're going to wrap up the show so you can go do that. We will acknowledge and discuss the New York Rangers because they're playing well and they're
best
team in New York
in New
playing
York.
Well. So we Such have to fans. We have to give credit where credit's due. But with that said, you always get in something, but I'm going to say that I'm ready for you to introduce me to the final segment.
Oh, yes, the final segment. Well, the Rangers, they had a nice little comeback win against Columbus, so good for them. Columbus's winning streak came to an end. It would have been nice if they had a chance to beat the Rangers to set the record, but that didn't happen as they got blown out by Washington on Thursday. Rangers, nice comeback win. Michael Grabner's an all-star. Michael Grabner. Oh, my God. It's like salt in the wound for Islander fans because I was a Michael Grabner guy, and I've said this for those that have been loyal follower listeners to our show since the beginning. I've expressed my admiration for Michael Grabner and what he did. Well, anyway, so that brings us to the hipster beer of the week. As always, is our final segment. Take it away, Mr. Hip.
All right, so we're breaking a unwritten rule that we've used to this point with the hipster beer of the week is that I haven't had any repeat beers from the same brewery. So we've had a different brewery each time. So we're breaking that rule. It's in fact going back to the original hipster beer of the week. That we're bringing that brewery back into the spotlight. That is Carton Brewing, located in Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey.
Yeah, how about that?
If I recall correctly, Monkey Chase the Weasel,
which is a
mulberry sour ale. But now what we're bringing to light is their coffee series. So what they are most known for series is called Regular Coffee. It's called a cream ale. It's 12%, and you know what? It's beer that tastes kind of like coffee. You know, without getting into the complex description of it, it's a very unique. You know, most of the coffee flavored beers that are out there are in the porter and stout, worlds. This is not. It's a cream ale. It's got some carbon. It's got carbonation to it. You know, just like you're having an ale, a pale ale, but this just has very strong coffee flavor. So it's very hard to get in cans. They were released last week, and I called about five places, and the day they got it, the five places that got it all sold out in like 2 hours of all the cans that they got.
Damn.
You get better chance of getting it on tap. There might be a few places in Manhattan that will get it. Better chance are growler fills and bars in Jersey. We're heavily distributed. Good news about Carton is they are building a facility on the land that they own to expand their production. So I don't. I think they shared a picture of it on Facebook a couple weeks ago. It's still got a ways to go, but down the line. Their beer is going to be more widely distributed and accessible than it is now because the cans that get distributed from this brewery just sell out almost immediately. It's just so limited. That all being said, they did release last week what were called their irregular coffees. Now, they have two different kinds. One is called Cafe Ichiro. The other is called Cafe Coretto. These, I don't know if you can even get outside of the brewery itself. I was fortunate enough to acquire them. And I've had the Cafe Churro, and it was actually excellent, I thought. But they're similar. They're just different twists on this coffee. So if you want to try something different and you have the opportunity to get your hands on it, try any of these Carton coffee. You know, double dry hopped IPAs, and you know, they're all, look, some of the IPAs are better than others, but you know, they're not that different, you know, within, you know, when you get to the good, IPA beer. This is just so out there, it's so different from anything else. So there you go.
All right, gonna have to get myself a growler since there's no cans.
You can get yourself, well, there's cans of regular coffee. They're still being distributed, but it's just so limited where the cans are going. So, yes, well, growler.
Hopefully it'll become much more widely available once they expand their operation.
Yeah. Indeed.
All right.
Well, you know what? I mean, what we could do is if you want to watch the games in New Jersey on Sunday, I could get a growler of regular coffee at the buy right that's not too far from here, so there's an opportunity for you to try it.
The regular coffee. All right.
Well, of course, there's always, you know, hipsters beer fridge, so you know that could always get you know worked on as well. It's always available. Okay. All right. Well, good show, and we'll
I'm sorry, and I know that this is kind of against hip and lip rules, but I realized that we didn't have a hipster moment of Zenith, and there were plenty of nadirs. The Giants and Knicks and everything else. So, this will be really quick, I promise. My hipster moment of Zenith was watching that absolutely exhilarating Houston Oakland game, but I just thought it was hilarious seeing Trent Dilfer and Matt Hasselbeck of on the ESPN crew sitting like on their little panel there, and seeing them, like, I guess they weren't right next to each other. They were like maybe one or two people in between them, but seeing how they are essentially they look like long lost brothers. They are as bald as can be. They both have like that egg-headed like shape, you know, like shaped head, you know, with the baldness there. And like, just looking back and forth at them, I was just getting a chuckle out of them. I'm like, look, I can't even tell the difference. Which one's Trent? Which one's Matt? I can't even tell. They both have the egghead bald thing going on. I just thought it was hilarious.
It's right. Probably intentional.
Yeah. I thought it was fun. All right. Next.
All right. Well, we'll get plenty of football to break down, and we'll, you know, look, preview the AFC and NFC championship games. And we'll see how the Knicks play out in the next week or so with this Derrick Rose situation and the team just, you know, now spiraling down the standings. And I think
we can brag about our new John Tavares starting lineup figurines. Yes.
Like it or not, Mr. Diehard Islander fan Lip, but I think we're going to be talking some Rangers next week.
Yeah, that's fine. That's all right. I mean, we can the Rangers.
You allow it.
Hey, the Rangers are the best team in New York right now. I know pitchers and catchers is coming up, and we're going to be seeing that in all the New York newspapers. Since the Knicks suck, the Giants are done. So it'll be, what's the countdown of pitchers and catchers? 31 days. Oh my God.
Well, you know what? You're feeding the fire, man. I mean, I wasn't even going there. Like, you're the one bringing that up. So make fun of it all you want, but you're bringing it up.
That's true.
Well, yeah, but you contribute by actually going into it. All right, enough. Let's spare our listeners any further banter at this point. I can't believe anyone made it this far.
We commit to.
If you did.
And you're all true hipsters.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. 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 Yes.